Welcome to the network. Are you about ready there, James?
Yeah, I'm just about ready here.
Okay.
Things all lined up.
You wanted to play, what do you want to open with? You want to open with
Frank Sinatra.
Oh, you know, you did that, and I was a little surprised.
Yes,
but,
I did it for the surprise in you.
Frank is a, did you know?
Old Blue Eyes.
Even, my mother hailed from West Virginia, mm-hmm. Okay, and she was what you might call in the late 30s, early 40s, a Bobby Soxer.
A Bobby Soxer with the speakeasy guy.
Yeah, and so, and her her father took her on the train to New York City when she was, I don't know how old she was. She must have been, you know, young teenager or something like that, mm-hmm. to see Frank Sinatra.
Boy, that must have been.
1941. Something right around that. Well, she would have been about 12, 13, something like that. Okay. Anyway, and so this was like the most memorable thing that she, and it was like going to see Elvis or like going to see Chuck Berry or something. I mean, it just, you know, it just, you know, she was beside herself. Coming from the country, she came from down in southern West Virginia and coal fields. Mm-hmm. But she, I think she raised mostly in Wheeling. But anyway, so, so then when, my folks were retired. My sister and mm-hmm. I decided to get him a president. And Frank did one of his last concerts.
Yes.
At the Kennedy Center in D.C. I can't remember, in the 80s somewhere, you know.
That had to be a...
Well, you know, he did not have the range that he had, you know, in earlier in life. But he had the phrasing still that was his, you know, was his thing.
Yeah,
his signature, you know.
Yeah.
And, and man, he could, you know... He could still do it. It was our sort of gift to our my folks who had, anyway. But yeah, so I'm you know, I'm good. You know, and my way is a little bit over the top. But
yeah, my way. Well, know. I want to try and tie that into something here. And I'm going to save it as a surprise.
All right.
But, my way is okay, what I thought about when I was naming the show on this morning. I want to talk about the emergency room and recovery coaching and addiction and treatment and long-term, long-term recovery. I want to talk about that, and I want to tie Frank Sinatra's My Way into that. So just stay tuned and bear with me. I think John also, you gave out the numbers, right? So people can call in if they want to, or listen. We want people to start listening while we're doing the segment.
304-885-0708 if you want to call in.
And go to www.enlightenradio and go to the player button.
At the top of this page.
At the top of the page. Listen to Frank for a minute. We'll be right back.
I've lived a life that's full. I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few. But then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step away. More, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I... Yes,
I did it.
It was My way.
Yeah, we're just tuning into, you're tuning into Recovery Radio. That song grabs me, and so many ways, and I'm going to try to tie it into our subject matter this morning, which is the ER and recovery coaches. That is the topic of our show this morning. You know, a big shout out to everybody that supports Recovery Radio at www.enlightenedradio.org. And just think about the song that you just heard. You know, I want to give kudos to Marty, Ardith, Jeff, and Senator John Unger. A special shout out to him, because today is the day that the recovery coaches of the Eastern Panhandle, headed by Senator John Unger from the Recovery Coach Academy, we are going into the emergency rooms in both Berkeley and Jefferson County. We start today. And oh, by the way, it's the last day to register to vote here in West Virginia, John. So we got some really, really good things to celebrate this morning, and especially the Recovery Coaches Academy going into the emergency rooms, which we're going to be talking about. I'm going to try and describe to you exactly what a recovery coach is. You know, I like the song that Frank Sinatra, when he talks about when things got rough and things got tough, and he chewed it up and spit it out. You know, recently we've been getting a lot of flack at the Recovery Coaches Association from some of the organizations around town, I would say, or just specific people, which I won't name, because, you know, it does not carry any weight. Because Senator John Unger and Marty Steiner and the crew, they stood tall and pushed forward. And today is a day of reckoning for us to see how we do in the emergency room. And I have no doubt that those who are assigned to emergency room duty from the Recovery Coaches Academy will do really well. And we'll be on target, on time. We've been taught very well. We know all the specifics of a recovery coach. And we've been doing that work inadvertently anyway, since most of us decided to volunteer for this. And I think that the Eastern Panhandle will be the only Recovery Coaches Association that will be doing this work free of charge. You know, most of the recovery coaches in the emergency rooms across the country, they get a salary, they get paid. And I might mention that most of our critics get a salary as well. Yeah, they do. They get paid, all of you guys. And, you know, and I'm not angry with you about that, as that's your choice. But I came into this movement as a volunteer, and I continue to be a volunteer. It gets kind of expensive sometimes, but, you know, I love the people of West Virginia because they come out and support what is right, even though sometimes the thing that looks right is what they support. But when they find out that it's not right, they turn on you, you know, and that's across the country pretty much. So you got to do the right thing. Recovery coaches are headed into the emergency room this morning. What is a recovery coach? Recovery coaching is a form of strength-based support for people with addictions or in recovery from alcohol, other drugs, codependency, or other addictive behaviors. Recovery coaches work with people who have active addictions, as well as those already in recovery. Like myself, I'm in long-term recovery, and being a recovery coach is part of my recovery process. So recovery coaches are helpful for making decisions about what to do with one's life and the part addiction or recovery plays in it. They help clients find ways to stop addiction. To stop addiction and to hashtag stay stopped. You know, you can get people to stop. You can get them to stop. And that's the job of the detox. You go to the detox and you get it. You get to 5 to 7 to 10 days or 5 to 7 days. And then you go to a rehab. And that's where you begin to stop. And the next part of your journey is to stay stopped. The recovery coaches can help a client find resources for harm reduction. And we talk about that for a minute, because harm reduction plays a big part in my recovery process. And these coaches can help a client find resources for harm reduction, detox treatment, family support, and education, local or online support groups, or help a client create a change plan to recovery on their own. Recovery coaches do not offer primary treatment for addiction, do not diagnose, and are not associated with any particular method or means of recovery. They support any positive change. Let me reiterate that. Recovery coaches and the Recovery Coach Association support any positive change, helping persons coming home from treatment to avoid relapse. Oh, relapse is a big one. After rehab, then what? Is something that we really talk about here a lot on Recovery Radio. After rehab, then what? What do you do with all the time that you have on your hands, especially if you're unemployed and you're having to find ways to make ends meet? There's a whole lot of barriers that we're up against. So, you know, I just, my hat goes off to those who are in the arena, who's fighting this battle with substance abuse in our country. And it goes on to say that recovery coaching is unlike most therapy because coaches do not address the past, do not work to heal trauma, and put little emphasis on feelings. Recovery coaches are unlike licensed addiction counselors in that they are non-clinical and do not diagnose or treat addiction or any mental health issues. You know, these classes that I took, I've been taking for the last 6 or 7 months now with Senator John Unger and the Recovery Coaches Association, have been kind of intense. We do a lot of role play. It's a lot of fun to be able to strengthen yourself as a recovery coach and then go and do the work. So today is a day where we're on assignment, which starts between 4 and 8 p.m. in the emergency room, and they have phone numbers and contact information for the recovery coach community here in Jefferson and Berkeley County. And if someone comes in to the emergency room overdosed and they get the Narcan and they get the treatment in the emergency room that they need to save their lives, we get permission from the recoveree, the person who has been brought into the emergency room. We get permission from them after they are revived and are able to speak and understand and be coherent. We get permission from them to kind of invite ourselves to become part of their life as a recovery coach. And these permissions are signed and everything is done through HIPAA, you know, and some of the training that we got is really kind of, it keeps you off balance because there are some particulars, John, that you have to pay attention to as far as HIPAA, the HIPAA laws are concerned. And so the partnerships that were formed because of the need for help, not handcuffs, in the emergency rooms, it has been an eye-opening learning experience for me. And so, you know, in addiction, for me, the long-term addiction, as Frank Sinatra was saying, that he did it his way. And the way I relate that to Recovery Radio is that in the active addiction community, I did things mostly my way, and usually it turned out wrong, but I persevered, and I understand now why I'm here. I believe that, you know, the gift that I got is survival, you know, and passion, and I come to give that back as a recovery coach. I went to a men's rally last Saturday, where all the men and veterans coming out of the veteran hospital who have received treatment and detox and all of that, and they need something to do. And so that's why we hammer away at after rehab, then what? I've met so many people who say, I had 80 days clean and I slipped, you know, and they come back into the rooms, or they come back into the meetings, or I talk to them in jail, and they're trying to figure out how they got back into the grips of this thing after being detoxed and got your oil change, and you've been sitting down and in a rehab or either in some jail cell, and you've gotten yourself medically cleared and cleaned out, and you got some sleep under your belt and some food, and you are released back into the community. And what do you do then? And what do you do then? So that's why on Recovery Radio, I think that my dream is to be able to have something that is in place after rehab. There's a process that you... Oh, and by the way, the Paloma Detox Center, located on Wilson Avenue in downtown Martinsburg, is opening finally today. And I say finally because I had an experience with a young lady that was trying to get into detox last week at the Paloma, and that option was not available because they were not up and running yet. So, you know, congratulations and thank God for Paloma being open today, because after the show, you know, I plan to get this young lady, you know, and you have to be medically cleared. We thought that you could just walk in off the street and they were all set up to get you medically cleared within that one stop. But you have to make your way to Paloma by way of the emergency room to get yourself medically cleared. Medically cleared, I would imagine, so that they can administer the medication that you need to help you get through this detox. And so, you know, there's a lot of moving parts that's involved with getting a person on the path. And I think that the Recovery Coaches Association, the Recovery Coach Academy here in the Eastern Panhandle, is at the forefront. You know, and it seems that we're in opposition to a lot of other people, and that is not what we want. You know, I think that we need to all get on one accord. There's many, many opportunities to get involved in the process and be a part of somebody's life. You know, a lot of times it's about economics. And I say, you know, to those, especially those cats that are out there slinging dope and carrying guns, I say, stop carrying guns and carry some funds. And I not only say that to that particular community, I say that also, John, to all the people with the deep pockets. You know, the people who are the stakeholders, the decision makers, law enforcement, you know, we have to have some guns available because there are some criminals that need to, you know, you have to take action against them. And one of the ways that we do it here in the United States is we pull a gun out on a person and, you know, get them under control. So I say no guns, funds. We need funds so that people can get to a place where they see some kind of hope. You know, lots of hopelessness sitting on the side of the streets and on the stoops and on the church steps. They're just sitting. They won't go inside, but the church is closed. Where I saw, you know, because I put boots on the ground and I go around to the places where people frequent when they're either homeless or looking for drugs or selling drugs, or, you know, people have mental illnesses, and they're all congregating and walking up and down together, and they seem to have this hopelessness in their eyes. You know, they have hopelessness. They're dressed in hopelessness. And, you know, the way we approach them, most of us, is with guns, but we need funds. You know, I recently got involved with United Way, and United Way is at the forefront of making sure that they have the right footprint so that they can be a part of the solution. So I take my hat off to those folks. I've also been involved with talking to people who are in the Eastern Regional Jail. You know, a good friend of mine set up an account for me, and I've been using that to communicate. although those funds are drying up, and I'm going to have to do something to make sure I keep those communication lines open. And if anyone is interested in getting involved with that piece, with all those moving parts, you know, I take my hat off to Debbie, because she really put something together that is, I mean, and it was a one-man show. I'm still trying to figure out how I can compile all the resources that she has so that I can reach out to people. And some of the pieces that are involved, John, are like the lawyers. You get to talk to the lawyer. And most important, because of this this new direction that I'm going in terms of the incarcerated population, I get to meet some family members who want their children, daughters and sons and grandsons, they want them out of jail and into treatment. And it's like you're jockeying for beds all up in Morgantown and Parkersburg and places way, way beyond anything that I would ever imagined that I would be doing, driving people from jail to these places. And big, my hat's off to the Hope Dealers. They've done it hundreds of times according to their records. You know, they've driven, made that drive, and they've given people opportunity to make the drive and help out. I think that that's a hard thing for them to be able to do. But I'm talking to some people and on the phone who are inmates, and they email me and they start to tell me their story. And then they give me the information so that I can contact the family to see if the family is willing to really get involved, because it takes connections. It takes the social connections. It takes the people that are in your community, those people that are around you. It takes the people in jail. You know, some of the people, some of the guards that I've met down there are really, really people who are just trying to put food on the table. You know, and I went and hung out down at the ERJ for a few hours last week, waiting on someone to be released. And I was sitting there waiting, and I watched them change shifts. And all I could think about, and forgive me, and I know I probably get attacked for saying this, but the people who work at the ERJ as guards, I guess it must be the night shift, they reminded me of Hogan's Heroes, that bunch of guys. I mean, they were smart, but that was a raggedy bunch of dudes, man. That's because they was in prison. And the prison guards down at the ERJ, clothing don't fit. If you can just stick with me here, I'll paint a picture for you. Most of the guys seemed overweight or severely underweight. They seemed they were very kind of stuck up. Nobody wanted to speak. The prison guards, like you say, how you doing? They keep walking like they're going to commit some kind of felony by being nice to people when they come in. But I did get to conversate with the people who were in charge of conversating with visitors, I guess. I guess you got one segment that's trained at how to greet the people that come into the premises, either as visitors or people waiting to pick somebody up to take them to rehab. It wasn't a nice experience at all. But, you know, it was early in the morning, so I guess people are mostly cranky. And the prison guards, I guess they're doing time with the inmates, because they have to stay in the back. A lot of cigarette smoking going on outside that place, too. You know, they come out for the cigarette breaks, and they have a little gazebo over there where they go and take the cigarette break. But the person in jail, I mean, the one guy was telling me that you can get $10 for one cigarette in there, but you're not supposed to be smoking. And he told me they use a battery. They use batteries to make fire. Now, that was an interesting thing for me to hear. And I'm saying, how do you guys light a cigarette in there? And he was telling me how it's done. And they use, so many mechanisms. Now, I was in prison, so I didn't forget all that stuff. People are very innovative in prison as to how to pass notes and how to pass things around and how to smuggle drugs in and how to treat themselves the same way they treat themselves when they were on the street, like this in the survival mode. You know, so after rehab, then what, man? So I become very passionate about that whole idea, because for me, recidivism was a really big thing, man, that kept me. It just kept me isolated from most people most of the time, you know. And the only people that I really associated with for many, many years were other people who were breaking the law, people who were using, getting high, mostly intravenous use, you know. And then they ran me by the crack era. You know, I tried it one time, and I turned into a space cadet. It's like I call up and down the street. So I said, no, this thing ain't for me. But I learned a lot, you know, and so now I'm here and I'm standing at the forefront of, with an organization, the Recovery Coaches Academy, Recovery Coaches in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. Such a great group of people. I've met so many wonderful people, and the trainers, they teach, they talk about recovery as though they were addicted themselves. Because it's all set up by the book, you know, the C-car recovery coach in the emergency rooms, and you go through this training so that you can respect people and respect their privacy and their rights, and to be able to, it's not a handout, it's a hand up. We give directions, you know, we intervene in the things that bring you down and provide you with a roadmap to the resources that you need to be able to come up out of that dark abyss that you're in right now in active addiction. So, you know, and this jockeying for bed space, you know, they're going to be putting a rehab, a long-term rehabilitation center in Berkeley County. I think it'll probably be a couple of years before that happens, because it's a big project, but we need it right now. And all we have now is the people who don't live in Berkeley County, who have these rehab centers popping up all over the place. Some are good, some are not so good, but we have to use what we got, and that's what we're doing. So I invite all those from the Berkeley County Resource Center and from the Jefferson County Community Ministries and the resources to just come together and see what we can do about getting people into treatment, okay? So right now, let's talk about Frank Sinatra again. And he said he did it my way. So let's talk about sober companions. A sober companion or a sober coach works full-time with the client. Full work days, nights, weekends, or extended periods where the coach is by the client's side, 24 hours a day. The long-term option can begin with treatment discharge and may develop into a coaching relationship that continues for several weeks, months, or longer. Long-term recovery is something that we can gravitate to. And, you know, but we need those people to sponsor somebody who is seeking to get into recovery. We need help and not handcuffs, and we need it often. And we need for people to listen to us. And as we scream and we want recovery, we want support. We need support. We need each other. I have opportunity during the day because I am unemployed at the time. I'm a veteran. Veterans Day is coming up, and I celebrate on those days. I used to celebrate by getting high, getting messed up off of heroin, but I haven't done that now for over 20 years. And, it's like I'm on automatic pilot right now. I just stay stopped. And so we're introducing, not to remove any of the treatment options that we've had for hundreds of years now. Well, a little over 100 years, I won't say hundreds, but records indicate that we've been, you know, in this war on drugs for a long time. It seems that it's almost like war on people. What do you think about that particular thing, John?
It's been an uphill struggle, I'll put it that way, mm-hmm. You know, and with a lot of stuff rolling downhill.
Yeah. It's a lot of SHBT, right?
Yeah, and it's just you know, sometimes it's hard to tell whether you're going forwards or backwards. I mean, sometimes you're just all in this big river, and the river's headed down there, and then what looked like forwards turns out to be a 100-foot waterfall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You think
it
all
swirls and all of it. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It's like, it's hard to.
That's a good picture, though, John. I like that.
I thought we were moving forward from about. Well, we really were. I mean, and studying economics, mm-hmm. We really were from mm-hmm. like the 55 to 70, mm-hmm. somewhere. But there's something happened right around the end of Vietnam and when Nixon got into office and they started their little dirty work of reversing all of Lyndon Johnson's mm-hmm. bills. They've been working on that for 40 years, and they're making progress now.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows you what a long view can do.
Yeah.
If you got the money to back it up. You know, so it's, but yeah, I don't know where we're going. I hope that everybody gets out there and votes.
Yeah, gets out there and vote. And you know, and I was thinking about what you just said about the money, because it brings back to mind what I talked about earlier about funds, not guns, right? And remember 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, we did the show, and I read an article in the newspaper because they passed this big drug bill, or they had a drug idea in the paper about the steps that they were going to take to combat addiction or combat drug sales and deal with the population that needs help. And remember, I said funds, not guns. Well, the first item on the agenda was the law enforcement item. And usually,
of course,
and usually, you know, in the recovery community, I'm not going to use addiction anymore. In the recovery community, when you talk about law enforcement, the first thing that pops up in my mind is a gun. I mean, sure. I don't even see the guy. I see the gun first,
right.
And then I make my way to the.
I might arrest you. I might just shoot you.
But you definitely need to respect the fact that I got a gun on my hip, and you know, and sometimes it's like it's their way or the highway, and usually the highway is the one that is pulling your showing the way for your hearse to go to the cemetery.
You never know. I mean, it's just it's. I mean, there needs to be so much reform there that, but you know, we're past it in a way, because the cops have been put in such an adversarial position with the communities anyway that, and they have to, you know, form their own. I mean, it's just, well, I'm sure you remember from the military, I mean, you know, unit, if you don't have unit loyalty, you could be in trouble, pal. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, I think that plays out.
Yeah, yeah. They don't have an easy job.
But they're alienated from the communities they're serving, mm-hmm. and they got all this military hardware now. And,
I
think it's.
And they got some bad cops and some good cops. And right. I think this is what I'm gonna say about it: the good cops need to tell on them. M&Ms. They need to tell on them. They need to tell on them people that's bad. The cops that are bad, if you a good cop and you know that there's a bad cop, you need to call him out and get him out of there. Because
well, I mean, I don't think there's any question, though, that that kind of corruption in the police departments, I mean, racist and other things. I don't think there's any doubt that's manipulated by people higher up than the cops, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain, you know, you cannot escape the idea that they're behind all these actions for which no one claims responsibility. There's policy.
There's policy.
Mm-hmm. There's policy. And so when you shut down all the voting sites in poor neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and, you know, if you're black and you're running away, regardless of whether you're armed or not, you get shot in the back.
Shot in the back and justified.
Well, yeah. You know, how'd I know?
He had a Boy Scout knife.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't. I mean, but it's just ridiculous, right? But it's not ridiculous. So you can't escape the fact that, you know, you're creating this environment in which, you know, you should know by now. You got 50 years of history of the kind of abuses that are going to happen.
Yeah. That's right.
Like the Chicago thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. They finally found one of those guys guilty.
Finally did. I didn't
the guy that killed Lockwood.
About 2 weeks ago they died.
Yeah, they finally I mean, I don't know how many times it's been, you know, swept under the rug, whatever, this time. Apparently not.
Yeah, you know, we're going to have to get a new way to say that swept under the rug thing, because that rug is probably needs... That rug is so bumpy and lumpy because we've been sweeping stuff under it for years, man. It's been got up under there. And when it finally comes out, it comes out in the form of violence. It's the violence when you get like somebody choking you. And it's choking you. So they're choking the rug, the space under the rug, because it keeps stuffing. And so you're choking it, you're choking it. And when it finally gets its breath, it's going to blow all over everybody,
Now, you know, don't the Buddhists, you know, say that's karma, right? You know, that's you're sweeping karma. That karma mm-hmm. under that's the karma. Rug, it ain't going to go away, you know?
No. And, you know, karma, that's good, but people are dying before karma gets a chance to show its face and to give people some sort of...
Well, it is a kind of karma, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's the bad karma and then the good karma, I mean, you commit enough... I mean, you could say that, you know, these empires, right?
Yeah.
That conquered all these peoples and slaughtered all these people and, you know, stole all their stuff to fund their army and everything, whatever, that was... You know, that they were going to get what's coming to them. Well, you know, they didn't for another 200 years. I mean, they finally did, you know, but, you know, everybody at the murder scene was already long dead, you know.
That's right. And we're going through the same thing, and we're going to have the same old cliche for the people who came before us. And this is for them, you know. The people died that came before us. When you put, I don't want to be in that category where I want to be seen, not viewed, you know. Don't be gonna come to view me. I want to be seen, you know. And so my dad always say, his friend, he said he don't want to be found. They found him in the he had been there 3 days and he got found. Yeah. My dad said I don't want to get found. You know? so I'm looking at it that way.
I don't want to end up in a funeral parlor.
Me either. And so as a matter of fact, I went to Brown's funeral home and I was trying to get an interview, you know, somebody to call in and talk on this radio station. He declined because the questions, you know, I said, well, you know, I was thinking about how many people how has your business picked up? You know, your business seems to be doing rather well. You know, are people dying of old age or overdosing on drugs or people...
He didn't want to comment on that.
No, he didn't want to come and talk about that. But the thing is, he didn't know what I was thinking was, why don't you have some kind of input?
What is that? Is that your phone?
Yeah, that's my phone going in. I'm going to have to tell him I can't talk right now. And so the funeral homes, you know, and I have a good friend who owns a funeral home. And so I'm not talking against the funeral homes. I'm saying that everybody needs to have some sort of positive impact if we're going to either get rid of drug addiction or at least arrest it or legalize it. You know, somebody was telling me that you ever read about Sweden or Denmark? Where is it legal?
What?
Opioids.
Portugal, I know. Portugal. I'm not sure about other places, but definitely...
Portugal, those places. Now, I mean, the United States, America, they're changing, but people are appalled. People have such...
They have a lot fewer overdose deaths than here. Portugal, they have almost none, actually.
Almost none.
Yeah, right.
You know, and people saying, well, hey, if you want to go and kill yourself with that poison, have at it. That's your business. You know, it's just, we're not...
Not really. Not really, because they're going to, you know, they're going to go in and rob your little convenience store and murder your teenage kid on the way out with some cash, so...
And the cash is
not entirely, out of your business.
Right. You got to look at that part.
Oh, well, I got to put them in prison. Well, I mean, in the prison, the private prison industry is very expensive.
Very expensive, and they don't want things to happen that would cause people to not be a recidivist or people to get, stay stopped once they stop. So, you know, It's a journey, but we're fighting this journey. Hi, Chris. How you doing? Christine waving at you. I sure would love to see you guys. I'm going to have to make my way down to Lynchburg, Virginia. But yeah, that's part of my history. Hi, Christine. Christine was there. She's always been the good one. I remember me, her, and Gaynell. Christine was always the quiet one. And she's the smart one, and she's still doing smart things. Say hello to the pastor for me. But yeah, my thing, John, is, you know, everybody has to stop whispering about this, you know, about addiction. There's a lot of hidden addiction up in these woods and these farm areas, and you know, people are addicted to substances, and we have no idea where they are or what they're doing until we see them on the sidewalk prostituting or robbing, doing armed robberies and things like that, because they, you know, they have this diminished capacity. That substance. Oh, and I read this morning from one of the sober houses here in Martinsburg. A young man posted. He said that there was some tainted. He said there was some tainted heroin in Anne Arundel County, and usually it takes a few days to make its way to Berkeley County and Jefferson County, and that's the stuff that overdoses people. And so, you know, I'm saying to you that you can call me 304-839-7924 on my cell phone, and I have the fentanyl test strips available. You call me and I will get one to you. It's 304-839-7924. And what the fentanyl test strip is that you put your dope into your cooker, and then you put that strip in. Just get a little bit on the strip, and it'll tell you how much, or tell you that it's fentanyl free or it has that poison in it. And then you can do with what you want to do with it after that. My suggestion is that you know what it is that you're buying if you're going to buy it, and stay alive, because the Recovery Coach Academy and Recovery Coach Association, we believe in saving lives. We believe in keeping people alive so that they can at least have an opportunity to wake up and smell the coffee. You get them to a place where they can stop. And then we have to talk about how to stay stopped. And so that's where the community comes in, because after you stop, after you go to rehab, after you go to detox, then what? After all these pieces are put in place and you're sitting there on the side of your bed thinking about how miserable and boring your life is without drugs and alcohol, how do you sustain? How do you pay bills? How do you get yourself in a place where people can count on you, or you can count on yourself? After rehab, then what? What do you do? And so we're creating, or we're inviting you to come and create for yourself your pathway to long-term sobriety. And it can be done. You know, you can just ask my sister that's looking in right now, Christine. She knows. I know Christine remembers the first day I saw you guys. I had just gotten out of prison, and I walked past Franklin Street. Not Franklin Street, down on Fifth Street, where you're on Federal Street. That's where we were. And I met Gaynell. Well, Gaynell met me because she called me over. And I hadn't been out of jail 3 days when I met her, and that is the mother of my son. And Christine, how you doing? There's so many stories that can be told about my journey, my long-term journey, from the inception or when I started taking drugs until I started to quit. And that's been quite a few, and lots of experiences. You know, I'm looking forward to having the son. His name is Kelso, of a man who was good friends with me, and he was assassinated in Washington, D.C., all behind heroin substance. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to talking to Kelso on air at some point or another, and so that I can I've never had an opportunity to tell his son the whole story from Lynchburg to Washington, back to Lynchburg, where his father was murdered in Washington, D.C. But anyway, and so Christine is aware of all of that. And you know, I believe that God just brings things full circle. The things that you feel like, because they talk about it in the rooms about making amends and talking, and all of that is good. I agree with all of that. And I'm getting the opportunity to kind of do that. I'm going to have the opportunity, hopefully and soon, to do a show that I want to call How Many People Did You Turn Out? Because there's a young lady, her name is Gail, and she lives in Lynchburg, and she lost her leg behind heroin addiction, I believe. And I asked her, how did she first get started using heroin? And she replied, when you gave it to me, James. Yeah. And so I'm looking forward to having her on the Recovery Radio so we can talk about after rehab, then what. So yeah, I'm gonna close out now, John, because we've been on about an hour. And
what do you want to play?
I want to play Marvin Gaye, On Down the Line. You know, I like What's Going On.
Oh,
Yeah. I really enjoyed Frank Sinatra this morning, so you'll be looking to hear more from him on Recovery Radio. Yeah.
What's going on? Here we go.
So what you got there, John?
We got going. We got What's Going. Here we go. We're gonna
Close it out.
Here we go, man. Good information of the day. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you. What's going on?
Get out there and vote. Register to vote.
Yeah. Take the kids and the grandkids if they obey 10. It's me now, Christine.
Brother, brother, brother. There's far too many of you die. You know we.
My son Rayshawn is going. He's trying to do a recovery radio in South Dakota. So big ups to Ray. Yeah, let me get back to you. I'm out.